John Allen presents the Creepy Crawl Podcast. Chris Rock said it best. Tupac was gunned down on the Las Vegas Strip after a Mike Tyson fight. How many witnesses do you need to see some shit before you arrest somebody? More people saw Tupac get shot than the last episode of Seinfeld. Hey, creeps. Welcome back to the Creepy Crawl Podcast. I am John Allen, and I am like a banana. I've got appeal. Maybe. I don't know. Guess what? It's a conspiracy episode. So research for today's episode occurred on April 2nd, and on this day in history in 1513, Juan Ponce de Leon discovered Florida. This is cool because as of this writing, it's also my first day back in Tampa. So yeah, here I am in Tampa. Thanks again, everyone who has been supporting the show. If you would like to join the sexy beasts, you can do so. You can go to patreon.com/creepycrawl. You can go to Venmo at jonathan-allen-154. And do follow me on Twitter. And that's at writerjohnallen. And there's no H because it is the boy band spelling. Now, creeps, the imaginary intro music for this episode is the song Green River by Creedence Clearwater Revival. And it's related to the episode. So, I sort of rediscovered my love for John Fogerty and CCR as I was driving for the millionth time back to Florida from Cincinnati. And as I was doing so, it jogged a memory that, well, inspired this episode. So, on September 13th of 1996, I was back home for the weekend from my freshman year at Ohio State. I think I maybe had stayed up in Columbus for like 3 weeks and got homesick. So I came home, and I had just visited a girl and spent the day with her, who I had dated a bit in high school. Her name was Katie Wessel, and as I was a college freshman, she was a high school senior, and she was a badass. I mean, gorgeous, cute little blonde, petite, but a real firecracker. She was actually the soccer star of her team and got a scholarship to college later on. But she would kick ass on the field, and then when the game was over, she was kind of like Stevie Nicks in person. I think she's, like, married with kids now, but man, I just wish I could go back. So, back to the CCR thing. I remember it was a warm night, because, you know, it was still summer, technically. And, like always, we were on her porch, maybe a little bit high, and listening to the song Green River by CCR. It was a perfect night, and I remember it was a full moon, and the moon was just illuminating everything, and I remember the lyrics to the song. Walking along the river road at night, barefoot girls dancing in the moonlight. And as that was playing, this beautiful barefoot girl was literally dancing at that moment in the moonlight to the song. I remember wanting so bad to drop out of college at that moment and just stay with her. Sometimes I wonder if my life would have been different. It was just a magical night, mystical almost. Sometimes I wonder if she even remembers it, but I do. I have this crazy-ass memory. So when I finally left after spending the day with her, I pulled into a BP gas station for whatever reason, and I guess I didn't need gas because I remember specifically parking at an angle where I was overlooking Interstate 71 on that beautiful night. Remember, we had no cell phone or internet, or barely internet at the time. I had spent the day with Katie, and we cared nothing about the news of the day. We didn't turn on the news. We just listened to Stevie Nicks and CCR and, you know, all that stuff. So, it's nighttime, And I remember tuning the radio to The Wiz 100.9 FM, which I believe is now 100.1 FM or 101.1, and that's the Cincinnati hip hop station. The velvety voice came on, and I just remember hearing him say, "I'm dedicating this next song to the late Tupac Shakur." And Tupac's emotionally charged Life Goes On began to play. I knew no details. I only knew that my eyes began to well. It was quite a day, and I will never forget it in my life. To have such harmony and then some, you know, emotional turmoil all in a day was quite a lot for me. So today we are going to cover the conspiracy whether or not Tupac Shakur is alive. So, creeps, let's take a stroll back to the 90s. Grab your FUBU shirt, put your pagers on silent, and creepy crawl with me. Tupac Amaru Shakur is considered by many to be one of the most influential rappers of all time. I'm an old school hip hop head, and I agree with that. I think he would fucking destroy these mumble rappers of today. And I kind of stopped listening to hip hop for the most part after his death. Much of Pac's work has been noted for addressing contemporary social issues that at the time that plagued inner cities. And he's widely considered to be a symbol of activism against inequality. So, as far as his death story goes, on the night of September 7th of 1996, Tupac Shakur was in Las Vegas, Nevada, to attend the Bruce Seldon versus Mike Tyson boxing match with Suge Knight at the MGM Grand. Suge Knight was the owner of Death Row Records and a general piece of crap. That fight was garbage as well. I remember it fully because my dad's a big boxing guy. I boxed a little bit back in the day, and Bruce Seldon got his ass kicked. Typical Mike Tyson fight. Anyway, afterward in the lobby, someone in Tupac's group spotted Orlando Baby Lane Anderson, and this guy was a Southside Compton Crip, who recently, in a shopping mall, tried to snatch the chain of one of Tupac's posse members, and this was one of those Death Row Records medallions. The hotel surveillance footage shows the ensuing assault on Anderson. Tupac soon stopped by his hotel room, and this is afterwards, and headed with Suge Knight to the Death Row nightclub, which was called Club 662, in a black BMW 750 IL sedan, and this was part of a larger convoy. So at about 11 p.m. on Las Vegas Boulevard, which is always packed, a bicycle-mounted cop stopped the group in the car because of loud music, and for some reason they did not have license plates. The plates were found in the trunk, and the car was released without a ticket. So about 15 minutes later, at about 11:15 p.m. at a stoplight, a white four-door late model Cadillac sedan pulled up to the passenger side of Tupac, and the front seat occupant of this white Cadillac began to rapidly fire into the car. Tupac Shakur was struck four times, once in the arm, once in the thigh, and twice in the chest, with one of those bullets entering his right lung. As far as the ginormous, hard-to-miss Suge Knight, he was only hit with shards and fragments of bullets, no different than, say, if I go to the shooting range and I'm firing away and the shells, you know, they pop back. It happens all the time. They pop back into my shirt and they're, like, fucking burning and it's terrible, but for, like, 2 seconds. So, this happens, and Tupac is taken to the University Medical Center of Southern Nevada, where he was heavily sedated and put on life support. In the ICU, That'd be ICE, ICU, the intensive care unit, on the afternoon of September 13th, 1996, when I was hanging out with Katie Wessel. Tupac died from internal bleeding. He was pronounced dead at 4:03 p.m. The official cause of death is respiratory failure and cardiopulmonary arrest associated with multiple gunshot wounds. Now, first, creeps, there are some existing theories that I don't believe, but we'll briefly cover before getting to the one that's juicier than an orange, and that is the theory that Tupac faked his death and is still alive. Now, these other theories, they're kind of like internet creations, like a Slender Man, that type of thing. Woodrow actually texted me these theories. On the way back to Florida, I accidentally left him at a truck stop in Cordell, Georgia, because I told him not to eat sushi from a truck stop. And as far as I know, he's probably still in the men's room. But let's go ahead and cover some of the alternate theories that Woodrow texted, presumably while he was sitting on his porcelain throne and wanting himself to die. As for the first theory that I don't believe but is out there in the interwebs, the most common one would be that the government, for whatever reason, had Tupac killed. Keep in mind, he was a dangerous poet, artist, rapper, and if you think about it, this is pretty common. I mean, look at the Bob Marleys who have died young, and, you know, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X. I mean, it just goes on and on and on to the point where it just can't be coincidence. So that theory's out there, but there's not a whole lot linking any evidence to it. The second theory is that Suge Knight and his attorney, a famous attorney named David Kenner, ordered Tupac's death. Quote, "Tupac Shakur was becoming a very outstanding actor, and it came to Suge Knight's attention that Tupac was going to leave Death Row Records, and the evidence shows you just don't leave Death Row Records and get away with it." This was said by LAPD Detective Russell Poole. And Russell Poole is amazing. He's no longer with us, but he worked closely with author Randall Sullivan on Labyrinth in the LA, and Labyrinth is capitalized for Los Angeles, of course. And this is a damning look into the LAPD's involvement with the Death Row Records label head, Suge Knight, as well as a pattern of police brutality and cover-ups. And these were all chronicled in reports on the LAPD Rampart scandal, which Russell Poole was kind of the head of. Now, this book, Labyrinth, it also revealed that Tupac fired attorney David Kenner shortly before his death and was looking to launch his own label. This would be a move that would have barred Suge Knight from the profits of Shakur's work. And Suge Knight, again, was a flaming piece of garbage. So, and he's ordered people killed. He fucking hung Vanilla Ice by his ankles over a ledge and to shake him down for money. I mean, this guy is a piece of shit. And he's kind of a coward. We'll get into that. So Suge Knight was in the car with Tupac on the night of the shooting. But as the author, Randall Sullivan, argues, quote, "If you look at the police report, the shooter's car pulled up and shot at an angle that really could only hit Tupac. And no shot really came close to hitting Suge." So think about that, creeps. Despite 14 shots being fired, not a single one hit Suge himself, who was seated next to Tupac. Suge gets away with a light grazing. Suge Knight is like 350, 400 pounds. Tupac was like 5'7 and 160. It does seem a bit convenient, doesn't it, creeps? Suge Knight also reportedly dodged questions about the shooting. You know what Suge could not dodge? a man half of his size's hands when he got knocked the fuck out. Yes, that really happened. And it's a reminder that bullies that have this kind of size are just cowardly clowns. And Suge Knight wears the biggest clown nose of them all. So let's get to our third theory. Ah, yes. It's a curse that follows me, folks. Numbers. Of course, it wouldn't be a good conspiracy theory without a bunch of amateur mathematics, would it? This involves the theory of sevens. And it's much like my earlier episode on John Lennon and the number nine. Go back and have a listen, see. So, fans have long cited the number seven's frequency regarding the details of Tupac's murder as evidence of, well, they're not really sure, but something. As it's pointed out, Tupac was shot on September 7th. He was 25 when he died. 2 plus 5 equals what, guys? You know it, creeps. 7. The rapper officially died at 4:03 p.m. As we know, 4 plus 03 equals 7. And his birthday was June 16th. 6 plus 1. What do you think, guys? You're right. 7. Oh, but wait, there's more, said Billy Mays. He was shot on September 7th. And survived on the 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, and a little bit before dying on the 13th. This could explain the title of his new album, The Don Caluminati, The 7-Day Theory. Also on track 5 on the Machiavelli album, the voice at the beginning says, quote, "And if the Lord returns in the coming 7 days, then we'll see you next time." The double album, Are You Still Down?, was released on November 25th. You see where I'm going with this? 25th, 25, 2 and 5 equals 7. So the 7-day theory continues. I must ask you, what witchcraft is this? Next we get to number 4. Kind of a dumb theory, but this is the theory that the notorious B.I.G., a.k.a. Biggie Smalls, had him killed. Now, we have to refer to Biggie as Biggie or Notorious B.I.G. because, believe it or not, and you can Google this and the image is fucking bonkers, there was a white rapper in the early 90s and his name was Biggie Smalls, and he looks like a cross between Vanilla Ice, Zach Morris, and a douchebag. So, Biggie Smalls sued and blah blah blah. But our Biggie, well, okay, we remember. Some of you remember. I remember. Some of you kids may have heard about it. The feud between Tupac and Biggie was the most storied in hip-hop history. And in an, of course, anonymously sourced Los Angeles Times investigative piece, former Times reporter Chuck Phillips, who was all over this case, wrote that Christopher Wallace, a.k.a. the Notorious B.I.G., offered the Crips $1 million to kill Tupac. However, after a 2008 Times story by Phillips was retracted due to the inclusion of falsified FBI reports, the notion was widely dismissed as well. Fact is, Biggie and Tupac were friends at one point, and before this beef, I mean, they hung out, Biggie slept on Tupac's couch, and Biggie always seemed to be passive about this whole beef thing, like he didn't want a part of it, as if he wanted amends, and he seemed contrite and sorry that this happened to Tupac. And let's face it, creeps, you make more money in hip-hop when you are feuding with a live enemy. So I think most of this East Coast, West Coast stuff was, well, a gimmick. I think a lot of the other rappers picked up on it and took it seriously, but Biggie and Tupac, I think it was a cash cow. Now, the latest conspiracy theory number five here, is now the basis for an upcoming film that's entitled Tupac, The Great Escape from UMC, by a filmmaker named Rick Boss. Quote, "This movie is about Tupac actually escaping University Medical Center here in Vegas and relocating to New Mexico and getting protection from the Navajo tribe." These are the words of Rick Boss, who is an LA filmmaker, told to ABC 13 KTNV. According to Boss, Tupac planted a body double in Suge Knight's BMW when he heard of the planned attempt on his life, and escaped by helicopter to Navajo tribal land in New Mexico, where, of course, federal agents could not follow him. It's protected land. That's why Native Americans have these casinos and kind of run their own show. Boss alleges that he obtained the information about Tupac's survival through Tupac's family and close surrounding circle of friends. Quote, "You can write a fiction story, but this is not fiction." He continued, "This is facts, bad English, through certain people I know." Again, I don't know, kind of a dumb theory, but the feds can't go on protected land, I will say that. And Tupac's body double, he did have one. And this body double is clearly on film, taken on the surveillance at the MGM Grand that night, right near Tupac, and it's plain as day. So, something to think about. Next, we have number six, and this is what I call the Occam's razor theory. That is, the simplest answer must be the answer. The killer was the late aforementioned gang member who got his ass whooped by Tupac's crew. That would be one Orlando Baby Lane Anderson, the Southside Crip, who again got stomped out right after the Tyson fight by Tupac and Death Row in the lobby of the MGM Grand. Now, Orlando Anderson was in a white Cadillac with fellow Crips who shot Tupac in retaliation for the ass whooping. Kind of cowardly. And by kind of, I mean 100,000%. As mentioned, Russell Poole was the decorated LAPD detective who really was on these cases, and he helped unravel that late 90s Rampart scandal, which you should, this is a great documentary, and that was a whole fucking thing. LAPD, it was crookeder than I was going to make a dick joke, but I won't. But anyway, yeah, he uncovered widespread police misconduct, and the crash unit, he dismantled all these things. His work revealed that off-duty LAPD officers handled security for Death Row Records and Suge Knight. And these were dirty cops, and they were engaged in criminal mayhem. Russell Poole was forced to retire, and this is verified, from the LAPD, because his superiors did everything in their power to stop his pursuit of the truth. Russell Poole was convinced that the chief conspirators were Sharitha Knight and Reggie Wright Jr. So Reggie Wright Jr. was the head of security for Death Row, and Sharitha Knight was the wife of Suge Knight. Now, she and Suge Knight were in this nasty divorce, and Poole believes that Sharitha and Wright kind of cooked up this murder plot and scheme, so when the divorce went through, they together would assume control of Death Row Records, which at the time, mid to late 90s, Death Row Records was fucking fire. I mean, they were everything. They were a rap in the 90s. Then, all of the men suspected of killing Tupac were murdered. This is fact. Mostly they're written off as like gang drive-bys and shootings and that sort of thing. Therefore, it doesn't get much media play. If this theory belonged to anyone besides Russell Poole, it would probably be dismissed for being like over fantastical. But Russell Poole was highly, highly respected and very well decorated. While working on a future tell-all book called Chaos Merchants, Russell Poole died of this mysterious aneurysm at a very young age, on August 19th of 2015. And this was while he was in the process of discussing the Tupac and Biggie cases at the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. So as you can see, a lot of people around this case die. That's why I, Creeps, would never investigate Tupac, because this case, the floor all around it, is hot, smoldering lava. Woodrow just texted me again, and boy, I do not want to hear about his exploits in a fucking truck stop bathroom in Cordell, Georgia. And by the way, if anybody's listening and they happen to go into that stall, I'm pretty sure he wrote my number down next to for a good time call. Don't call me. So anyway, now let's get on to the real deal. Let's get to the most analyzed theory, and one that I kind of forced myself to believe because I just want it to be real. And that's that Tupac faked his own death. It just has to be real because it's so nonsensical. So, this emerged, this idea, shortly after the rapper supposedly died, days after he was targeted in that drive-by shooting on the Las Vegas Strip. A lot of it, this theory, has to do with Tupac Shakur's respect for the political philosopher Niccolo Machiavelli, whose treatise, The Art of War, and that's not to be confused with Sun Tzu's The Art of War, is widely believed but has been misconstrued as advocating for faking one's death in order to manipulate an enemy. Machiavelli actually wrote, quote, "Sometimes it has been of great moment while the fight is going on to disseminate words that pronounce the enemy's captain to be dead or to have been conquered by another part of the army. Many times this has given victory to him who used it." But Tupac did believe his version, you know, "I'm faking my own death," and that's what Machiavelli would do. That is how Tupac interpreted it. So, with Tupac believing this, everyone endorsed this idea that Tupac was just adopting Machiavelli's outlook, I guess, strategy. And he did adopt the stage name Machiavelli. Think about that. I mean, he did it directly from Machiavelli. There's no denying that. So, Machiavelli. And the inclusion of the phrase "Exit Tupac, Enter Machiavelli" was on the album sleeve for the Don Caluminati, The 7-Day Theory. That is the album which also depicted Tupac Shakur as Jesus Christ, who we know was resurrected. And these were all deliberate clues left behind by the artist. On the Machiavelli album, the producer is listed only as Simon. Now, Simon, this was the apostle, if you're into the Bible stuff, who helped Jesus carry the cross and was one of the first to witness his resurrection. So the theory is that Suge Knight could be this mysterious Simon. Theorists of this idea have also picked apart this video interview with Tupac Shakur's mother, Afeni. And she is the only individual besides hospital personnel to see him after he was admitted. And she said, quote, "In the end, he chose to leave quietly." Unlike a lot of conspiracy theories, this Tupac affair left very authentic and logical clues. So, Creeps, this is not some lizard people teleporting from a glowing crystal cube during a blood moon tomfoolery. So where's the beef, you're asking me, huh? Hashtag Wendy's 1984, RIP Clara Peller, you demanding octogenarian. Not many people will get that reference, but what it means is, prove it, John. Well, there's so much that I don't even know where to begin. So let's start with one. Is it hard to fake your own death? Michael Nice, who was formerly one of Tupac's bodyguards, again confirmed, was reported to have died in December of 2018. And this was days before he was set to release evidence he claimed proved that Tupac was still alive. So, he is considered legally dead. Well, let's fast forward. In a video uploaded to YouTube after this supposed death, he told viewers, quote, "My name's Michael Nice. I faked my death on the 18th of December of 2018, and I'm here today, back from the dead, to show why and how I faked my death. I'm going to put the record straight." He continued to acknowledge that his reappearance would be, quote, "a shock to all the people who knew me," but said he would, quote, "explain everything." He said, "I confess I faked my death and I feel quite ashamed about it, but it had to be done, and I'm here now to explain the reasons why." Nice added that faking his own death proved that he had the capabilities to fake Tupac's death. And let's face it, he did it. He did the damn thing. Everyone thought he was dead. He was worm food, but guess what? Nope. Now he's viral. He faked his own death. So, why wouldn't he be able to fake Tupac's death? He was close to him. Explaining how he managed to pull off the stunt, Michael Nice said that he had arranged for an ambulance to collect him after he faked this death, and that he used a magic trick he learned in his youth to stop his pulse. Wouldn't that suck if you were a magician doing that trick? And you're like, your pulse is stopped, and then someone's like, "Oh, this guy's dead." And then they just buried you. You'd be a ghost magician then. Houdini? No. More like, "Boo, Dini. I'll stop now." Anyway, so his body was taken to a hospital, and a contact at a funeral home picked him up and left an actual corpse there to be taken to the morgue while Michael Nice escapes. Quote, "I laid low for a year and I'm back now to tell my story, put things straight, and get on with the mission," he said. Nice claimed that Tupac had been smuggled into Cuba with the help of Fidel Castro after he faked his death in that drive-by shooting. This makes a lot of sense because Fidel Castro was catty and basic, and anything he could do to piss off America, he would do. Think about all the Cuban baseball players that defect, all the people, all the migrants that will just put together a shoddy-ass raft just to risk their lives and cross the choppy ocean just to make it to South Florida. So for an American to go to Cuba is a big coup. And for fucking Tupac Shakur to go to Cuba, oh my gosh. Amazing. So, the Cuba theory is in fact logical. Now, people speculate that Tupac was very weary of all the bloodshed that accompanied gangster rap and the rap beef, and was longing for an escape. And this makes sense because Tupac was actually a gentle soul. If you listen to his earlier stuff, he was more of a poet. And, you know, you watch his work in movies like Poetic Justice, he wasn't about the guns and the drugs and all that. So he wasn't really about that life. I don't know if you could say he was living an image that wasn't his, but it was an image, and he had grown weary of it. So, Cuba is a natural destination. Why? Well, because his aunt, I rotate between saying aunt and aunt, and I don't know why I just said aunt sounds fancy, but his aunt, she is Asada Shakur. Asada Shakur was a staunch figure with the Black Panther Party, as well as the Black Liberation Army, and she sought political asylum in Cuba back in the early 80s after escaping from a New Jersey prison. And this was following a hotly contested murder conviction. So the theory is Tupac is alive and living incognito in a small Cuban town. Locals in Old Havana claim that they have seen him wandering around the town. There are videos out there on YouTube, wherever, where people will walk up and down the streets with a photo of Tupac, and they will have it age progressed. Now, there's a lot of, like, Tupac sightings online, and you look at it, and it's like, okay, obvious Photoshop. I know black don't crack, but these people aren't even trying. They're taking pictures of Tupac at 25, like he looks the same now. But, no, these people are going to Cuba with pictures of Tupac, with the age progression, and asking citizens of Cuba if they've seen this man. And so many replies are in the affirmative. Oh, yes, I saw him here. I saw him here. So, I don't know. It adds a lot of fuel to the theory. But what about the official narrative that debunks these things, you ask? What makes that so questionable? Well, let's get to the night in question. Before the alleged shooting that would become known as the fatal night that Tupac died, he and his camaraderie of outlaws and bodyguards made their way across the Vegas Strip to a mansion belonging to Suge Knight, the Jerkface. When I say outlaws, I don't mean that Tupac was a cowboy in the John Wayne era. That was the name of his protégés. They were a rap group. So, according to members of the Outlaws, Suge Knight and Tupac, while at this mansion, unexpectedly disappeared briefly while everyone else waited patiently to go out and party. One of the Outlaws is quoted as saying, "I don't really know what Pac or Suge was doing at the time. I just knew we was waiting and I was ready to go." Improper grammar, but that was the quote. Reportedly, after about a half an hour of waiting, Tupac and the others were ready finally to go to a show at Club 662, which is, again, the Vegas club that Suge Knight owned, and Tupac made an unusual request to his bodyguard, Frank Alexander. And, creeps, remember that name, Frank Alexander, the bodyguard, okay? So, I was walking to the car with Suge and Pac when I was opening the door to get in the back seat. Then Pac stopped me and said, "No, take the keys and go drive the Lexus with the outlaws. We're going to be drinking, and you're going to be the designated driver to drive us back after we've finished partying. So this was really out of the ordinary, because Tupac would never go anywhere in public without at least one of his bodyguards for his safety. So why, after this discussion with Suge Knight, would this strange and, I don't know, order that's never ever occurred before occur? So, given such abnormal circumstances, what happened later involving his, quote, death was either very convenient or a coincidence. Further evidence of the shadiness surrounding Tupac's shooting comes from the simple fact that Pac was not wearing his bulletproof vest. Tupac and his bulletproof vest were synonymous towards the end. He always wore it, and he wore it around the house. So what the hell do you think he's going to do at a big-ass event like a Mike Tyson fight in Vegas? Tupac Shakur was obsessed with protecting himself because 2 years prior, and this started the whole Biggie feud, he was shot in New York City, and he thought Biggie did it, and that led to all this stuff. So for him to go to a high-profile public event like a Mike Tyson fight without his bulletproof vest, it's highly suspect. It was, to me, like a math problem, creeps. Calculated. Now, strangely, Tupac, at the last minute, told his bodyguard and girlfriend, Kidada Jones, to ride in another car. Odd. Kidada Jones, by the way, is the sister of Rashida Jones, the beautiful actress and daughter of music mogul Quincy Jones. Rashida Jones, you might know as Karen from The Office, or I forget the character's name, but she's Leslie's best friend on Parks and Rec. Anne. Her name's Anne. That's right. So, yeah. And Kidada Jones, much like her sister, was a looker. Now, this white Cadillac with the quote-unquote assailants was never found, okay? After the shooting on the MGM Grand in the Strip in Vegas, a very noticeable high-end white Cadillac was never found. How come there was no helicopter chase involving the Las Vegas Police Department? I hear helicopters over my motel right now. Helicopters are out there all the time, especially in Vegas. Las Vegas is in the middle of the fucking desert. So there's not really many places a white Cadillac can go. Is it that hard to find one car? And it's not like Vegas' strip is something you can speed down. And there's cars everywhere. And it's Vegas. Don't they have a camera every 6 inches? Come on, man. I don't know. I trust Adams more than this blunderful nonsense. And by saying that, it's because I don't trust Adams. Because they make up everything. Wah, wah, wah. Science. So, the shooting occurred, and then we get to the hospital. Well, of course, no reporters were allowed in the hospital, yet medical personnel inside the building were seen on TV giving the following statement concerning Tupac's medical condition. Quote, he is severely injured internally and has multiple gunshot wounds to the chest. While this was taking place, other media sources reported the following. Quote, we've been informed that doctors have told family members that they can expect the rap star to once again recover from his injuries. As well as this police communication supervisor who identified herself as Miss Coleman, who stated on the record, quote, the rapper will survive. Now, creeps, these are all indisputably things that would only be said if it was clear that a recovery was imminent. And these were not said by gossipers. These were said by media, police, hospital personnel, you know, the man. Despite such statements, Tupac remained in the hospital, reportedly in this induced coma, before apparently passing away from internal bleeding many, many days later. Okay, death is pretty straightforward. So, if there is no conspiracy, these doctors got their degrees at the University of Phoenix or something. I had to pee real fast, so I'm back. So, the events shortly following his, quote, death have been equally shadier than a redwood tree in July. Tupac was swiftly cremated the day after his autopsy in a private ceremony that Suge Knight reportedly paid $3 million to secure. The cremator listed Tupac's body as being 6 feet tall and weighing 215 pounds, while his driver's license identified him as 5'9", 168. He was actually more like 5'7". The following is fact, guys. The cremator, after this, retired, vanished, and has literally never been heard from since. Not a reporter on God's green earth has been able to find this man. Seriously, creeps. Gonzo. Poof. Vanished like a virgin on prom night. It's not a surprise because Las Vegas is known as Payoff City, meaning that many people, including doctors and press, could have been in on Tupac faking his death. No one gets cremated that fast, let's face it. Well, not under these circumstances. The next day after an autopsy in a murder case? It seemed like destroying evidence to me. So, there was an autopsy, but looking at the photos, which I'll post on Twitter, the only picture available is of a man not facing the camera. He has darker skin than Tupac and a much larger frame. Are you telling me Tupac gained 40 pounds from the start of the night till the end? The footage from the casino shows Pac as slim, almost small. Did he grow in death? Oh, and the biggest smoking gun. The man on the slab is missing entire fucking chunks of Tupac's famous tattoos. That's right. On Tupac's right side of his neck, Machiavelli is not seen in the autopsy picture, but his neck has not been cut into. How do you explain that? As if that wasn't enough, it is visible even to the naked eye to see that the edges of the back of the head in this photo, as well as the neck and the elbow, are noticeably choppy, which would indicate that the photo scene likely was taken from another source. Honestly, guys, Photoshoppers today would laugh at this, as well as our next segment, the Woodrow Comedy Minute, that lasts longer than a minute. So, sorry about the sound today, guys. I think there's some issues because I'm in Florida, and being in this little motel, there are a lot of air conditioners going, so that's something that I'll be working on. Okay, creeps, Woodrow, as mentioned, he is still in Cordell, Georgia, waiting for a bus, and is super pissed at me. Regardless, he texted me some jokes as usual. He also texted that I, John Allen, am, quote, a shit soup eating ass hair. Man, he is not going to let this go. Okay, well, I mean, what was I supposed to do? Wait all day? I mean, I had a 7-hour drive to get here, and he's just stuck on the toilet. So it appears that these jokes are all related to him being stuck at a bus station in Georgia because of that truck stop sushi. So I guess I'll just get right to it. At least he's not here to distract me this time, so silver linings, right? Joke number one. How does a man from Georgia hold up his pants? With a Bible belt. I see, that's kind of cute. They are religious there. Driving down there, creeps, the billboards literally rotated from porn, guns, and Jesus. Interesting state. Good peaches, too. Joke number two. A man sold his flesh to a cannibal sushi shop. I guess you could say he's on a roll. Meh. It's as cheesy as a pizza, but okay. Alright, well, last joke from Woodrow, courtesy of text message from a bus station in Cordell, Georgia. What's the difference between a dirty Greyhound station and a lobster with breast implants? One is a crusty bus station, and one's a busty crustacean. Well, today's topic is rapper Tupac, but Woodsy is apparently more interested in the other dead rapper, Big Pun. Get it? That's our Woodrow. Now back to the show. Okay, creeps, we're going to get a bit deep now. We're going to get deep like plankton on the bottom of the Titanic, okay? So Tupac has been talking to us for years. You've all seen that Dave Chappelle skit. Well, remember Tupac's obsession with Machiavelli? So in 1996, Tupac's final album, The Don Caluminati, The 7-Day Theory, was released, not under the name Tupac, but under his new stage name, Machiavelli. That is spelled M-A-K-A-V-E-L-I. And this was released 2 weeks after his death. Now, getting a little Sherlock Holmesy here. If you rearrange the letters in Machiavelli, and it sounds like a stretch, you get am alive, K. Are you following me? Good. The K is more than just a shortening of okay. In fact, that K is thought to be another hint towards Tupac's present-day whereabouts, because the K, it's believed to be short for Casanova the Don. Remember the Don Columinati? You got a K and a Don, and now you have Casanova with a K and a Don. Now, Casanova the Don is a rapper who is widely believed to be an alias for Tupac. There's photos of this guy, and he looks nothing like Tupac, but they're saying that's a cover, because when you listen to the vocal similarities, it is indistinguishable and fucking insane. And what's more, Casanova the Don has collaborated with Hussein Fatal and Young, and those are both members of Tupac's old crew, the Outlaws. Now, this is crazy. Casanova the Don released a song called Mystery in 2012, 16 years after the supposed death of Tupac. This is basically Tupac's voice. And the lyrics to the song are pretty cut and dry. A lot of it I can't even say because I'm a white guy. But let's go ahead and read off the lyrics, okay? Thug life, thug life. It's been 16 years. Still stuck in a dark cage, living in my mind of that fateful day. 9/7/96, I remember like it was yesterday. I got a lot to say. Thug, N-word love. Thug, N-word cry. How the media said that I died, but I'm still breathing. Who do you believe in? Everything that was said was a lie. See, listen. We were in Vegas getting faded in the city of sin. I had a bad feeling that night after the fight at the MGM. Can you feel me? We left the telly on the way to the club. These hoes pulled up right beside us. My adversaries steading on plotting my death, squeezing bullets to the name on my chest. I heard gunshot, but it got weird. Instead of bullets, only smoke appeared. Next thing I knew, some man in a suit just standing there. They opened the door, grabbed the N-word by the feet, let my head hit the concrete. It was a nightmare. Dragged on the street, scars on my back, looking at the white Cadillac before the black back. Over my head, I couldn't believe what I happened to see. N-word. Who looked just like me, dressed like me in the passenger seat, but it can't be me. Sitting here next to Suge, another four shots and it can't be good. I gotta find a way, that is what I say. Next thing I know, a blow to the head. I don't know, creeps, that song reminds me of a pimple. On the nose much? What do you gather from that? Because what I'm gathering is he got hit in the head, knocked out, and he looks up, and there's a body in the car where he's supposed to be. So, the internet has really sleuthed this supposed death. The most famous photo, and again, check the Twitter. This stuff is very convincing. The most famous photo, the last one taken of Tupac, was of him and Suge Knight at a stoplight after the fight on the Vegas Strip. Now look closely. I don't know if they even existed in the era, but I do know the model of car that Suge Knight was driving was not one of those push start cars. So look at the picture. Now look at the ignition. There are no fucking keys. They're at a stoplight in Vegas. How is the car driving? It just doesn't make sense. Another strong piece of evidence made against the photo is a picture snapped of Tupac and Suge Knight earlier. So, the night that he was supposedly killed at the MGM Strip in Las Vegas. Okay, if you look at the images in the casino, you'll notice something that does not add up. And I've got that photo on Twitter. It is very obvious. If you examine the facial hair on Tupac's chin, and then you compare it to this photo, the most famous photo, taken like 2 hours later on the Vegas Strip. His beard is like way longer. What the fuck? Did he grow a caveman beard in 2 hours? He's not Rosie O'Donnell. Also, that infamous car photo, this is creepy. And when you see it, I hope you go to my Twitter. Many say it's superimposed. And I have the proof. There is an old photo of Tupac's face, and it is literally the same face from that famous photo, the last photo ever taken. It's the same face, guys, from angles to lighting to expression to his eyebrows. Everything is the same. If you morph it in, and they've done this on a computer, if you morph this old picture of Tupac into this famous picture, nothing changes. It fits like a fucking puzzle. So, and also, when you examine Tupac's social security number on the official coroner's report, you're going to get the numbers 546-47-8539. So what's strange about this, you ask? Well, first, this social security number is not registered in the official death index. Secondly, this social security number was issued in the state of California in 1977. Now, I was born in 1977. Guess what? Tupac's always been older than me. In fact, he's been 6 years older than me, or 7 years. Tupac was born in Brooklyn, New York in 1971, and didn't even move to Cali until the late 80s. Oh, and lastly, that social security number, as of 2011, was still active. Now, this isn't just an internet thing, in case you're wondering. You know, a lot of these things get soiled, kind of like how those ghost hunter shows ruin actual ghost huntings. The internet can ruin a lot of things. So, in case you're wondering, this is not just people on the internet making shit up, even though the facts I presented are pretty convincing. Enter Suge Knight Jr., the son of the amorphous blob, Suge Knight Sr. Now, he set off a firestorm a few years back in like a series of, I guess you could say, like increasingly wonky messages. The son of Suge Knight claimed that, quote, Tupac is alive, and began posting screenshots of a text message conversation in which he and this unnamed individual are talking. Now, this unnamed individual said, quote, "You said too much, time for you to go." A couple days later, Suge Knight Jr. then posted a video of himself in his car saying, quote, "They were following him." Quote, "I can't even fucking sit in the light. Fuck this, I gotta go." Creepy stuff, and it fits in with the prevailing theory that whoever helped facilitate Tupac's disappearance will stop at nothing in their attempts to keep it under wraps. Further evidence? Well, Suge Knight Sr. So, he has also publicly doubted the death of Tupac Shakur. In fact, he straight up said Tupac's alive and in Cuba, and there is a famous photo of Suge Knight a few years back in Cuba talking to someone who looks just like Tupac. Now, the former rap tycoon, former because he turned out to be a bit of a bitch and is currently behind bars, spoke out from jail in a recent documentary and stated the following. "When I left that hospital, me and Pac was laughing and joking. I don't see how somebody could turn from doing well to doing bad." So, the official narrative is that he was in the hospital and pretty much immediately induced into a coma. But now we have Suge Knight saying he was at the hospital joking with Tupac. So what's going on? And by the way, he's right. How someone can turn from doing so well to doing so bad, that's true. Doctors who have been asked about this case have said that if a gunshot victim is still alive 6 days later, the very high odds are that that victim is improving, not declining. Now, Suge's got a history of making bold statements. In 2014, he said on camera, quote, "Tupac's not dead and it's somewhere smoking a Cuban cigar," wink, wink. Cuba sure keeps popping up, huh? I'm waiting for Cuba Gooding to knock on my hotel door. So, what's more, just 6 months later after saying this, Suge Knight was shot 6 times in a nightclub attack. So, would this be more attempts to silence those in the know, perhaps? Suge's son was threatened, then Suge gets shot up. I mean, think about it. Suge had 20 years to be shot by whatever enemies he had, but was shot only when he spoke about Tupac? And Suge Knight has a lot of fucking enemies. There was a planned public memorial for Tupac, which the press was banned from. Interesting. And that was shelved at the last minute. So that left Suge Knight and that long-since-vanished cremator as the sole people to have seen Tupac's body like last. Oh, and remember that bodyguard I told you to remember, Frank Alexander? So, just like Suge Knight, except he succumbed, he died mysteriously before the release of this documentary called Murder Rap, where he was about to spill the tea. Again, this is a man who could have been killed many times, but suddenly a very questionable suicide arises when he threatens to talk about Tupac? Smack my ass and call me Sally. Well, Woodrow just texted. Now he's on this cramped bus, and I guess he's like in this crashed against a window next to some woman who has a mustache. And I'm really going to hear it when he gets back from Cordell, Georgia. Next up. So in 2010, Creeps, there was an interview with Tretch, who is a famous rapper from Naughty by Nature and good friends with Tupac. So during this interview, he found himself answering a supposedly off-the-record question. And that question was, is Tupac really dead? So with a confident reply, he's quoted as saying on audio, "Last time I saw him, he was in Cuba, man." Now, this audio that was captured only because Tretch assumed that the interview had ended. Private investigator Jimmy Poole believes there's evidence that Tupac is living in Belize, not Cuba. You know what? Maybe that could be right, because I don't know the location, the geography. Maybe it's not too far away, but I reckon you gots to keep on moving if you're in hiding, right? I Belize. This is possible. So Jimmy Poole shared a photo of a man who looks very similar to Tupac as he would look now, posing with a fan. A little bit heavier, but look at the eyes and look at the eyebrows. It's unmistakable, and it's on Twitter. Now, Jimmy Poole claims that Tupac told him, quote, "Damn, man, I'm fine. I ain't got no problems with anybody. I wish peace and happiness. There was nowhere else to go. Nobody else wanted to take me. But all I kept in my mind is one day, I'll be back." Well, that's definitely a day that we are all waiting on. Can you imagine if that does happen, guys? How amazing that would be? Like, that would just be one of the biggest stories. I just cannot even imagine it. Wow, it would just be so freaking amazing. So, moving on, as one does. There are more clues about the death of, well, let's put it, the non-death after his death for Tupac. For example, in the video for the song Toss It Up, yes, folks, once upon a time, there were things called music videos. MTV played them. Well, they didn't really play Tupac, but, you know, BET played it. I used to listen to BET. Pretty good station. In the Toss It Up video, Tupac is wearing a Penny Hardaway pair of sneakers. Penny Hardaway was a big ball player at the time, NBA. But, caveat here, these sneakers were not available at the time of his death. So, was this video recorded after his death? Also, in the Live and Die in L.A. video, which that song, oh my god, that's my jam, Tupac jumps into a car while wearing Air Jordans that, again, were not available when he died. Explain that. Did he have some hookup to shoes that hadn't been created yet? I don't get it. I want they to explain that. They is what I call the mysterious cabal behind conspiracies, because they are like stairs. They're always up to something. The lyrics from the song Life of an Outlaw from the 7-Day Theory Don Caluminati album suggest that Tupac planned his fake death in advance and is now enjoying his success because of it. From those lyrics, quote, "All for the street fame on how to be managed, 6 months in advance to what we plotted, approved to go on sale, and now I got it." Then there's another video that comes into play. It is the video of the song Smile by Scarface and Machiavelli. And in this video, we see a car identical to the one that Tupac was shot in, bullet holes and all, with Machiavelli being crucified on a cross, like Jesus, who was, again, resurrected. And this crucifixion, there's a still frame of that, which is oddly identical to his supposed autopsy photo. Again, clues. Not Blue's Clues, Tupac's Clues, or Two's Clues. I'm sorry. So, creeps, normal average Joes and Josettes are constantly reporting seeing Tupac. I already discussed a little bit about Cuba. A man in Somalia told the Mirror, which is a British tabloid, that he spotted Tupac inside of a car in Somalia right around the time that the USA Network released its Unsolved True Crime series, of course based on the murders of Tupac and Biggie Smalls. I suppose maybe it could have been an actor. That kind of makes sense. Tupac has also been sighted elsewhere, including 2017 in New Jersey, 2015 in California, 2014 in Boston and Los Angeles, in 2012 in Sweden and Los Angeles. He was even spotted at the Occupy Wall Street protest. He was spotted at the BET Awards, and he was spotted at NBA games. So those spottings are a little bit bullshit. Again, they're just guys that kind of look like Tupac, and they tie their bandana in the front. So that soils a lot here. But the real facts that I told you about, like with all the secrecy and the moving around, oh man. You gotta wonder. Life is too short not to have fun with this. So, is Tupac alive? I hope. Again, his return would be, for some of us, the most amazing event of our lives. But, of course, I imagine he would face legal issues and so forth. Faking your death, I can't imagine it's a legal thing. Maybe he's alive, but enjoying the simple life. Again, he was a sensitive soul, kind of forced into the gangster rap scene by peers and industry standards. But if you listen to his earlier albums, they were poetic and political, not the stuff of blood and gore. Of all conspiracy theories, I've never seen one with so much proof and actual valid evidence and from reputable sources, like the cop that brought down the Rampart scandal. I mean, come on. Tupac, again, he was not the gangster he portrayed, not deep down. Even his famous stomach tattoo, Thug Life, was hiding positive messages. In an interview, Tupac said Thug Life, THUGLIFE, was actually an acronym standing for "The Hate You Give Little Infants Fucks Everyone." So, do I believe in this theory? I'm going to go with yes, because, again, the stuff with the autopsy that was rushed, and then the cremators no longer on the face of the earth, and so much stuff is just going on, and You can't find them in you can't find witnesses on the Vegas Strip. Ah, come on. So I say yes. Maybe. Just maybe. He felt his later music was celebrating hate, and the hip hop prophet disappeared in order to live the thug life he actually believed in. That's just my take, but I'm right. Thanks for listening, creeps. Tupac, if you're out there, bro, DM me. Katie Wessel, same. I would like to know if that barefoot girl dancing in the moonlight still kicks off her shoes and dances under the lunar luminescence. Hey, I again want to thank all of the people helping the show. One of these days, I'm going to get a microphone and blow up. If you would like to be like these sexy MFers, you can do so by going to patreon.com/creepycrawl. You can also go to Venmo at jonathan-allen-154. And you can follow me on the Bluebird at writer John Allen. No H in John, because it is the boy band style. Now, today's fake outro music, I have to dedicate it to Woodrow because he just texted me again and the bus broke down and there is no AC and the woman next to him is, odorous and he can't get out and he's in the sketchy Greyhound station in Cordell, Georgia. So, that music for Woodrow is Georgia on My Mind by Ray Charles. And folks, even Ray Charles can see that Tupac is still alive. So until next time, remember that Suge Knight is still a bitch. Listen to Tupac's messages and Creepy Crawl on.